And like I said, I was aware of you as a talk show host, Mishki, but I have to admit, I would tune in from time to time, and I did not like the show. I wasn't a fan of the Mishki broadcast in the early years. Yeah,
thanks.
No problem. But and I can't even say what it was. I think I only gave you a few chances.
When I started my show was a serious show.
And yeah, I think that's what it was. It was different. You had serious discussions.
January 3rd, 1994. And after 17 months with Vogel, I just went to the other extreme. I just decided after 17 months with Vogel and that miserable breakup, I was going to do Edward R. Murrow radio. I was going to do serious radio. I did three episode race relations shows and crime summits with judges and lawyers and things on gay rights and all this heavy duty stuff with guests and sometimes continuing it for three straight nights or something. And I'd go home with a headache every night and have people calling up saying nigger lover and this kind of stuff. And it was just miserable. I was miserable. The show was miserable. I'd go home with a headache. I hated it. Friday night would come around and I'd say, well, let's do something nutty just to blow off some steam, get away from those last 4 days of heavy duty, heavy issue discussion. And we called it Misfit Fridays. And Misfit Fridays was an attempt to just go crazy.
Okay.
And the shows were so intense Monday through Thursday that I'd really go crazy Friday, even more so than I do now. I mean, those shows Friday nights were out of control. And that was so fun and felt so much like it was addressing my actual talents, which were not in politics, not in discussions of race relations, or not in crime summits. I mean, that was not my...
I can't even imagine that now, because now you even joke about it or make fun of it, saying
right.
We're going to talk about...
I was a fool.
Politics, abortion, gun control.
Yeah, it was dumb. The reality is, I used to do some horrible shows. It's amazing I still work here.
I must have heard some of those.
The Hubbards let me learn on the job. I mean, I was the worst talk host to ever have a regular job here, easily. But they let me figure it out. It took a while, but I finally figured it out. So those Friday night things helped, and then I ended up, summertime came. So I started in January. Well, January is winter, and you often are, I don't know if you know this, but in the radio biz, people are willing to hear heavier subjects in January than they are when summer comes. Summer, a lot of talk radio gets low ratings, and music radio does better because it's summer. It's, you know, Beach Boys time and listening to music and driving around the lakes, and who wants to talk politics? So summer came, and those Fridays became the whole show. I said, screw it. You know, it's summer now. It's summer nights every night. I'm not coming in and doing any political stuff. It's all Friday night. It's all Misfit Friday. And that became the Monday through Friday show, and that became the Mishki broadcast, and we've never looked back. That's what the show is in 2005, what it became in the summer of 94.
Okay, and that's the show I've grown to know and love, the Mishki broadcast, the one that's all the Misfit Fridays that you do now. Because I must have tuned in during those early years and heard the heavy discussions, roundtables, and I just tuned it out. I must have never heard the Friday program.
Heard it, and I was even bad then. We have to hold that possibility out there.
Perhaps.
Radio is hard. It's hard to do a good show. It's easy to do a bad show.
Right.
And
do you think you're a good judge of that, though?
I'm as good a judge as anybody. In other words, I'm sure there are nights when I'm wrong and someone else is right on what's good and what isn't, but I'm not a worse judge than the average listener.
Okay.
So, I mean, my opinion on the value of my show is as good as theirs, and I think that a lot of nights I just have a hard time doing a good show. Barbara Carlson told me one time, she said, Mishki, every week you're going to do a rotten show. Every single week, you're never going to be able to get away from that. You're never going to escape a week where you did a good show every night. It's not possible. But she said, every week you should do a great show, and the others are in between.
Okay.
And that's been about the way it's been in the years since she told me that. It has worked out to be about, and she'd been here several years when she said that. She knew what she was talking about. You do radio long enough and you figure out some stuff. Vogel, Carlson, other people, Yates, people had some sound sage advice for me from having done this for years. And they always turned out to be right. Everything they ever told me was right.
Well, there are some shows where I'd hear you say towards the beginning or maybe a little bit into it. This show is horrible. I have nothing prepared. I'm just feeling lousy. And those, you just take calls from the listeners and they turn out, some of those would be my very favorites.
Right. And I've also learned why sometimes that is. I have done shows where nothing is working.
Right.
But from a listener standpoint, nothing working is funny. I don't see anybody laughing. I'm sitting here doing a radio show. I'm watching nothing work, and I'm frustrated by it because I had a vision for what I wanted the show to be, and nothing's happening that way, and I'm angry. But Gilligan, you know, didn't want his days to go the way they did all the time, and that was the show. The reason people like Gilligan's Island was because Gilligan screwed up all the time.
Yeah.
And the reason people laughed at Jerry Lewis was he'd slip on a banana peel and fall down. Jerry probably didn't like falling down, or this character he was playing, but people laughed at this poor idiot. So a lot of the nights, I think what's happening is, they're watching an implosion, and it's entertaining to them, or they're watching a guy struggling, and it's life. It's a little vignette. It's something to enjoy, but for me, it's not enjoyable. I'm not enjoying doing it. But I have come to see that whether I'm enjoying it or not doesn't have anything to do with whether or not people listening are enjoying it. I've had a ball some nights where I found out later people didn't enjoy the show at all.
Okay.
And I thought, what? How could you not? I did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, the drunks enjoy themselves too in a stupor, and often their wives don't.
I remember sometimes...
Wives don't enjoy them. Their wives might enjoy themselves. I don't know. And I'm sorry to even bring up that wives have to enjoy themselves when their husbands are drunk.
I was going to say, I remember some early years, or in the earlier years of the broadcast, you would, when you didn't have anything to bring to the table and nothing was coming to you during the day and you had nothing to discuss, nothing was clicking in your mind, and you'd come and you'd seem embarrassed or having a hard time that you had nothing prepared. And now it seems like you're a little more comfortable, a little more easier with it. Are you coming more to Vogel's perception that it's okay to just come in some nights and turn on the mic?
Yeah, and I also got another nice piece of advice one time. Well, not a piece of advice. He didn't even know he was giving me advice. But I was talking to Greg Brown one time, the Red House Records recording artist from Iowa.
Greg.
And you know, after years of being on the road and playing and singing and traveling, he said to me, you know, the highs aren't as high anymore, but at least the lows aren't as low anymore. In other words, it's another gig, and he does it, but he doesn't. You know, he's done so many now that he doesn't walk in anymore with the idea that this has got to be the be all and end all. This has got to be the night of nights. And you know, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But he's more relaxed about it because he's done 5,000 shows. And I didn't realize it at the time, but later I would recall that, and that would comfort me a little bit. Because that had happened to me after a while, too. The highs aren't as high anymore, but the lows aren't as low anymore. Doing a great show isn't quite the thrill doing a great show was that first year. Mm. And doing a rotten show, I just know there, you know, spring trainings in the morning. I mean, every day is a new season. It's wonderful. It really, you know, in baseball, they say there's always next year. In radio, there's always tomorrow. You get up the next day and you're starting all over again. Yeah, I got up this morning and had no idea what I was going to do on the show tonight. I'll get up tomorrow and have no idea what I'm going to do tomorrow night. There's always a chance to redeem yourself, to try again, and you keep trying to do that one. The thing that motivates me is you keep trying to do that one perfect show, and of course you'll never do it. But that's the motivation. Sometimes you get real close, at least in your mind, you think, wow, I was 87% there. I was almost there to that perfect show, that one great show when you'll have done as well as you can ever do. So that's, you get up every day thinking, maybe it's tonight.
How close do you think you were when you had a blowing L?
94.
94? Okay. I was going to say it had to be up there because those...
Blow and Al.
That week or perhaps 2 weeks that it went on, I'm not even sure.
Yeah, the Blow and Al stretch. Oh, golly, that got close. I may not be able to top that.
Those
but
were
I'll
incredible.
Try. God, if I thought I couldn't top it, I'd have to quit. So the belief has to be there that I can even outdo the Blow and Al thing. Of course, I have to accept that what made the Blow and Al thing work was I had help. I had Al.
True.
Al, I needed Al. Oh, I needed Al for that, and Al came through. There is only one Al, and you know it's like the Edmund Fitzgerald bit. What saved that was the guy I was interviewing.
Right.
That collaboration thing. You can do better with two people than you can with one. I mean, it's something. McCartney and Lennon. You know, they had to have each other, and I needed Al to get to my opus.
This is one of your listeners had asked, do you ever feel guilty when someone calls in, say, with the Oswald curtain rod, or they call in to ask about school closings and you take on the persona and immediately jump into being the person that they're looking for and
you mean when I'm
leading them on? And in the extreme, yeah, the blowing Al Zephyr when you went on for a week or 2 weeks leading this poor fellow on into believing that you were the weatherman for KSTP.
Yeah, I do feel guilty about it. You're talking about when I pull the wool over people's eyes,
right,
when they are the foil and they don't know it. Do I feel guilty? The answer is yes. I grew up Catholic, so of course you're going to feel guilty. Unfortunately, in humor, there is a lot of tragedy. In humor, there is a dark side often. When Henny Youngman says, take my wife, please, that is a shot at his wife that can't make his wife feel too good. But, you know, he says, I'm just kidding, honey. You know I'm just kidding. I'm having some fun. And that's what I try to say to Al. You know, in the end, I was just trying to have some fun. No malicious intent. And God knows I love the guy. I mean, I truly love the guy. And we're buddies now. We're just radio buddies. But
right,
no hard feelings.
And that's the same thing that the listener had mentioned, too. You know, he feels sorry or feels guilty that this is happening to the fellow who has no idea what's going on.
Well,
but he says, on the other hand, much like myself and probably most of the other radio listeners out there, this made for some great, funny radio.
Right. You wouldn't have a conscience if you didn't feel a little guilty about it. You don't want to do humor to hurt people.
Right.
You know, when you do a practical joke on somebody, sometimes it backfires. The person doesn't like the practical joke. And you have to say, oh, I'm sorry. And sometimes they do like it. And sometimes they laugh along, and then it's everybody's having fun. But, well,
Did you dread the night when you broke the news to Al about your true identity?
Yeah, I was hoping he wouldn't feel too bad about it.
And I actually thought that went pretty well.
I thought
you
did
reveal
too.
It. And
yeah.
He's
an easygoing guy, and
right,
you know, I tried to impress upon him that I really did during those days grow to like him a lot, and still do. I really like him personally. I just think he's a wonderful guy.
Right, and I think that did come across to him because he's still
calling.
Right, he still calls. He has a great affection for you and the broadcast.